Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 322, recorded on February 12th, 2017. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Doing all right.
Good.
Jeff's off playing in the snow.
Yeah.
He went to some festival.
He's playing in the snow, and meanwhile, we're having like a beautiful day in California because it's not raining today.
He's in the hot springs.
Is it raining down there?
It did yesterday, but we're all clear and golden and beautiful today.
Yeah. So. Who knew it actually rains in California?
Well, thank God it has been. We've been so freaking dry that maybe we won't have to do water rationing this summer.
Yeah.
I doubt it. We probably still should.
No, use all that extra water. Use it right up. All right. Nobody cares about water, though, in California.
Everybody cares about water in California. Nobody cares about California's water problems outside of California.
There you go. So
let's, big babies.
Let's talk about betas that have been released.
Betas.
We've got a second round of betas for iOS 10.3, tvOS 10.2, and watchOS 3.2. And we also have
Didn't we talk about betas last time?
Yeah. I think it's every week almost. And for those on the public beta for 10.3, that second one also came out. So
what do we care about in these betas?
Well, I mean, we talked about the 32-bit app alert last time.
Yeah.
So it's changed. It's still there. Really, it's just they've added a learn more button that takes you to a web page that doesn't exist yet.
The one that's going to tell you why you need to stop whining about the loss of your 32-bit apps.
Yeah, they haven't come up with a
but
good way
really,
to spin that yet.
Really, the way they approach that is they like tell you, well, here's why 64-bit is so much awesome and so much more better, and so why you really don't want 32-bit. Or they always approach it like, here's why you want 64, and give you all the positive stuff, so then you're like, ew, 32-bit apps, those must be gross.
Yeah, they are. Half as many bits, who wants that? And for those in the UK, I guess three Wi-Fi calling is coming
nice.
At 10.3.
Finally.
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't think there were... So in tvOS, they're still working on the fast scrolling stuff that I'm actually looking forward to, the index scrolling, tweaking that. WatchOS 3.2.
You must have a crud ton of stuff on your Apple TV.
So not like apps, but I do have a very massive iTunes library, like movies and stuff. So scrolling through that's going to be really nice.
How many movies do you have?
About 500, I think.
Holy crud, that is huge.
Yeah.
Is this through home sharing? Like, this is stuff you've ripped and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and
my purchase library, I think, is approaching 200.
That's incredible. Good for you. My purchase library is approaching 5, I think.
I've been buying a lot of the bundles, like when they come up, and like replacing a lot of my old, because I have all that. A lot of the stuff is duplicated because I had it ripped, and I have it, you know, from my old DVD collection.
Yeah.
But now that I have an HDTV and stuff, that stuff's starting to look bad. And so, like, when Apple comes out and it's like, hey, you can get this old movie for $4.99, I'm like, bye.
Yeah,
so
there
that's
you go.
Kind of been what's been happening. Or, like, hey, you can get the entire, you know, movie collection of Die Hard for $50. It's like, okay, I'll take them all. Or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with how they've been able to remaster those really old movies and make them actually look very cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting, you know, when like Star Trek and you know, all those old Star Trek movies, for example, they look really good when they're remastered.
Yeah, so I've been replacing a lot of, so a lot of it's duplicated from my old movie collection. But, and it's just because I don't want to take the hassle of, like, I don't know, getting Blu-rays and ripping those, or it's just, like, easier for me to buy them on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I may regret that later in life, but for now, it's kind of awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's 3.2 for watchOS, which, I think at some point I said that this current release has SiriKit, but it's watchOS 3.2 that includes SiriKit. So the
right,
all those apps that let you do like payments and Uber and that sort of thing through Siri, that comes with watchOS 3.2. You've also got the theater mode. It doesn't look like there are a lot of apparent changes, probably just bug fixes right now. But for what it's worth, there. You can't downgrade if you do the Apple Watch thing. So just be aware of that.
Is this from experience? You know this?
I do know this from experience. I haven't in a while. I haven't updated to the beta on the watch because it's not worth it. You know, I rely on my watch all day every day to sort of work, and it makes it less worky. So I just leave it.
Yep.
iPhone 8 rumors. Now,
yeah.
I want to hear from you on this. So this is a report from Tech Trader Daily. They say that the
bastion of that's the bastion, like, gold standard of iPhone rumors.
Is it? Bluefin Research, etc.
Tech Trader Daily. This is the site we're sourcing now?
Yeah. Well, it's via Mac Rumors also. So they buy into it at the very least. Their tea leaves tell them that Apple is going to be starting iPhone 8 production earlier than usual in June.
Sure.
But that doesn't make any sense to me because don't they only start in June?
It does if they're doing OLED displays like we're thinking, and OLED displays tend to have lower production yields, which means it's going to take more time to ramp up production.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I totally get it. Makes sense. You want to ramp up your production earlier.
I mean, are we talking about producing iPhones, or we're talking about producing component parts? I mean, at this point stage, I would imagine they're putting in component part orders, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about production.
Yeah. So this report is kind of vague on that. I
don't think they're starting assembly, you know, like final assembly of iPhones for release in, you know, September, October.
Yeah. So the idea is the release date's not going to be any earlier. They're just starting it earlier because of yield rates or what have you.
I would imagine that's what's going on. Yeah, they're getting their component supplies up because they've had trouble with that in the past, right? Is like demand outstripping supply, and they just can't. It's going to be harder after the. I mean, they've always been able to ramp up after the fact, and I'm not saying it's not possible, but it's more difficult to do. And I'm suspecting that because this is the 10th anniversary edition and there's going to be a major design change, those are the years when they actually tend to have a lot higher demand. So I think this is just Apple trying to get ahead of the curve for once. And they're still probably not going to be able to be ahead of the curve, but at least it seems like they're thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's unusual. I mean, they've never done it before. So that's the one thing about this rumor is like you're hearing it and you're going, I don't know, Apple's, this is not Apple's, you know, general modus operandi, but.
What's that?
To be ramping up production this far ahead. They've never done it in the past. So that's the one thing that's strange about this, right? It's like, why haven't they done this before? Because they've had these kinds of production yield problems in the past. So what's different about this iPhone launch? And the only thing I can think of is, you know, this is the 10th anniversary edition. It's expected to be kind of like a big deal. There's going to be this whole change in technology. It's like a significant update. And again, a lot of those component supply parts that are going into this new phone, Apple is probably predicting that they're going to have more yield and production issues than they normally would with without iPhone launch, any of the iPhone launches over the past couple of years.
Right.
So that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ming-Chi Kuo thinks that all of the this year iPhone is going to have wireless charging. So whatever it's called, it's going to have wireless charging.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
I'm guessing and it's going to be
inductive. And wireless charging capabilities, we have to be clear about what we're talking about here. It's not only going to have wireless charging. There's still going to be a lightning port on there. You know, it will have the ability to be charged wirelessly.
Yeah. So would you guess that the wireless puck is going to be included with the phone?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's going to be an optional pay us 30, 40 bucks, 50 bucks, whatever for this accessory.
I would guess that too. You got to wonder how not going to be super useful to a lot of people. There are a lot of people who are just going to say, who cares?
There's rumors they're not even going to include like the lightning to headphone adapter either.
Right.
Or a lightning to USB-C cable.
Right.
It's just going to be the phone and your standard lightning to USB cable, just like it's always been. The not including the headphone adapter is interesting, but I think it makes sense. I mean, that's typically how Apple does these things, right? The first year when a major design change comes into play, they give you the little adapter, and then they slowly start taking accessories away, like in box accessories. So I don't put that past them.
I don't think it's a huge deal.
I haven't used mine. If somebody wants mine, they can probably have it. I think I've used it one time.
Yeah, I have two. I have two of them, and I never use either. I occasionally, I basically have one, the one that came with, it's attached to my Shure SE215s and so whenever I want to use those, which is very rarely, it's ready to go.
Yeah, but mine's in my little, what I call my dongle case, where I have every freaking dongle I could ever possibly need, and I hardly ever use any of them.
Right.
But they're there just in case. It's like the just in case case. I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I lied. People can't have my lightning headphone adapter because I may need it at some point. But at this point, I've used it all of one time. And I think it was the one time I used it was just to test it to see if it works.
That's smart. But yeah, so they're talking about, let's see, as far as the wireless charging, it looks like it's going to be inductive. Very likely based on QI, I think it's Qi. Qi's latest quick charge 2.0 spec, which goes...
Well, that'd be good.
Which is can go up to 15 watts, which is, two and a half amps?
Is that two? Because that's pretty standardized at this point.
Three amps.
I think it's backwards compatible with their other technology. Correct me if I'm wrong, but... Yeah, you know, that means there's going to be a lot of accessory options out there. So you wouldn't have to necessarily invest in Apple's version of a charger.
You shouldn't have to. I mean,
it is Apple. I mean, you know, like I never put it past them to be like, and we're using some weird wireless technology that we acquired and it's three times faster than the competitors, but you have to use our stuff. Right. And, oh, by the way, you've got to license it if you want to make an accessory through our MFI program.
Yeah, well, if it was three times faster, I would understand. If it was something like that, if there was a real benefit.
Well, I'm just making that up. I mean, it could be just as fast, or they can say ours is in some way more better, right?
Efficient.
I mean, it's just the classic thing. I mean, it's classic Apple. It's like, and it's a lightning connector instead of a micro USB.
Well, thank goodness we can still plug our phones
into... Why wouldn't they do the same thing with wireless? I mean, I wouldn't put it past them. So the news that it might be... standardized, you know, using a standard technology that already exists is actually pretty good.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I'm surprised I didn't realize that you can actually get that fast of a charge speed out of an inductive charge.
Isn't that the same stuff Samsung's currently using on their latest models?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still not as fast as a wired charge, but I mean, it's not bad.
If it goes 15.
And then too, the other thing is that you'll have the quick charge, you know, it's been being rumored that you're going to have the quick charge feature where it'll get the first X percentage like really, really quickly and then sort of back off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of how chargers work now, wired or wireless.
Right.
You have the quick charge. It really just depends on how many amps it can push. But if this says, if 15 watts is what this thing can push, that's more than an iPad charger.
That's true.
Right? That's more than the, that's three amps of charge. You know, it's pretty impressive.
But that's the whole up to thing too. Like, is that really the full throughput you're getting?
Well, okay, so basically it's going to be 3 amps at the beginning, as long as your battery is not, so if your battery is at 90%, it's not going to be pushing out 3 amps of charge because it's going to be slow charging that battery. But if it's down at 20%, yeah. It's going to go that fast. It's just a matter of dealing with.
But I mean, is induction charging like susceptible to other interferences? And like, is it always? Is that always theoretically possible? I just don't know. Honestly, I don't. I'm asking the question because I don't know.
You
know, is it like a lot of technologies where it's like, yeah, my internet connection is up to, 150 megabits per second, but do I ever actually get that?
Based on my limited
80.
Based on my limited understanding of inductive charging, I would say that it's probably going to be very consistently fast.
Cool.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's pretty close range, and unless you're around a big power source,
your computer and your computer's Wi-Fi signal is and Bluetooth is jacking with the induction charging. I don't know.
I don't believe the RF signals really mess with the magnetic waves as much as, you know, other RF technology messes with RF technology. Now, if you're standing by like a power transformer,
or you've got it next to your speaker, I don't know.
Possibly, yeah. But I think it's going to be pretty good. So, what else do we have here? So, this is a rumor from DigiTimes, which can be hit or miss, but they believe the iPhone 8 is going to have an iris scanner to authenticate with your eyes instead of your fingerprint. Now, my initial reaction to this is, okay, cool. Except Apple has never been into just adding superfluous technology just because they typically add the technology to make the experience better. So the experience has to be better than authenticating with your fingerprint, and I'd have to see it to believe it.
That's my thing with this. This rumor keeps coming up all the time. Facial recognition, iris recognition. I don't know about you, but again, the way I operate my iPhone is generally it's on a flat surface or it's down or it's in my pocket, and sort of as I am picking it up to bring it up to actually use it, I'm putting my finger on the thumbprint scanner so that when it actually, in the milliseconds it takes to get to my face, guess what? It's unlocked.
Yeah.
So why, in what way does iris scanning better? And I think some people might argue that it's more secure than a fingerprint because, the fingerprint can be sort of hacked, right? If someone can lift a good copy of your finger, it's been shown if someone can lift a good copy of your fingerprint and they have the right technology and they can build a little silicone mold thing and all these things, like it's not impossible to replicate. Whereas retina scanning, I think, is maybe more secure than that. I'm not an expert in this stuff, so I don't know. But let's assume that is the thing, right? It's like, well, retina scanning's better. It's more secure. And Apple is, devoted to protecting privacy and security and stuff like that. The user experience, like you said, still, I think, is not that much better to sort of warrant using that. Now, facial recognition, again, if the camera can sort of do it at different angles, which I think it can kind of deal with angles, then that's a different thing. But you wouldn't be using that technology for like unlocking your device. You'd be using that technology for like setting user preferences on the fly or something like that. And to me, that makes more sense in a multi-user operating system, say like your Mac. So specifically retina scanning, cool that maybe you can do it, but yeah, I'm with you. I don't see the need for it, and I don't see where it improves the iPhone experience.
Yeah.
in any way, shape, or form. I guess unless it's like as an add-on for, I don't know, I want to better protect my banking software that's on my iPhone, and it's an option, but some just sort of for like general thing. Unlocking. Yeah, I don't know. Or securing my data.
Right.
You know, as a secondary layer, I don't know that I'd want to do Retina versus my thumbprint. And my assumption would be that the Touch ID wouldn't be going away, that this would just be in addition. But I don't know. Unless it's playing into the fact that they're going to get rid of the, I guess another argument for it could be is like they're getting rid of the home button altogether. So let's use a technology where we don't need the little ring. And we tried, you know, something where we didn't have the ring and maybe it wasn't working as well. So we're going to switch to this Retina thing. But I don't know.
That sounds like a scary experience to me. That sounds like it could go bad very easily. Like someone has decided, oh, we want to have a fully glass front. We want to have edge to edge display, but oh, that means we can't have the home button that we've always had. Okay. Well, we'll integrate it. But then that means, you know, Touch ID isn't going to work the way that we want it to. Oh, well, no problem. We'll just authenticate with Retina scanning. But then suddenly it makes unlocking your phone a bigger pain in the ass.
Right.
Just because someone said, oh, let's have an edge-to-edge display.
Like, do you have to hold, like, are you going to have to, like, stick the camera, like, in your eye?
Yes. Or just, like, no, I don't know.
Like, how close does it have to be? Like, can it read? So, every implementation of a retinal scan that I've ever seen, you have, like, a little eye cup you have to, like, stick your eye in, at least in the movies.
Yeah, you have to bring the cup with you. You attach it on.
You have this little suction cup accessory that goes over the camera. That's a little eye cup. You know, stick this on.
What are you doing?
Right, no, unlock your phone. My phone. Right, take this off.
Yep.
No, I don't think super it's like convenient. That. I think that's just movie stuff. But you know, I don't know. I can't get that excited about. I don't know why people get excited about the retinal scan. I think the only reason people do is because of the movies. It's like it's the cool technology like you had in the movies.
But that's like the Android way, right? They threw the crazy
right, exactly.
technology
no, out. Totally. That's why I don't put much stock in these rumors. Again, I think it's the kind of technology that Apple's investigating. But until, until the user experience can be better than Touch ID, they're not going to do anything with it.
Yeah. So speaking of security, a research company, software company, Elcomsoft. Reporting via Forbes says that Apple has been storing deleted web history in iCloud for way longer than seemingly they should. So they said, I believe it was up to more than a year. Mm-hmm. So a history that you delete from your device, they've been storing it in iCloud, but they ended up after the report.
This was because of the syncing, right? Because your iOS devices, if you've chosen to have like bookmark and history syncing and all that, it's that data is going to iCloud and then out to your other devices.
Right.
That's the source of this.
Yeah. So
people are wondering. It's not just like Apple is collecting your browsing history.
Right. So it was all. It's only accessible if you have your iCloud login information. So it's only available to you. It's not just out there. And you need special forensic software to actually get in there once you have the iCloud information. However, since the report came out, Apple's tweaked it, and it really only lasts for about two weeks now.
So this seems like it was just sort of
an oversight.
Coding error or something like that, where it's like, sorry, the echo just went off for some reason because it's a piece of junk.
Sorry, I can't find the answer to the question.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, honestly, I could see. You know, you get your for loop wrong, and then suddenly you're saving too much history.
Yeah, or you're just you're not actually really deleting stuff. You're marking it for deletion. I mean, there could be a lot of reasons why they didn't notice it or didn't see it, or, you know, I don't think it was anything nefarious. And
it sounds like it's a pretty a simple error, something that someone missed, just given the fact that this report came out and 2 days later it was changed.
Right.
So Apple saw this and they went, "Hey Joe, what the hell are you doing down there?" And he goes, "Sorry," and he fixes it.
Whoops. Yeah. Whatever it might have been. And again, it sounds like it wasn't really exposed to anybody. The concern, I guess, would be that, you know, served with a court order or something like that, which Apple does get from time to time, they would have access to that data. So now by deleting it, they literally can't even turn it over if ordered to do so.
Right. That's the assumption. They were quick to point out the fact that they could be storing it elsewhere that this forensic software is not aware of, but that seems unlikely. Now the real question is, how does one go about disabling this feature if you don't want?
I would imagine that if you just turned off bookmark syncing in iCloud, then none of that stuff would get stored.
Yeah, that's.
I think that's the feature that it's using. So, you know, if you go into your Mac or your iOS device and you go into iCloud and you just turn off Safari syncing, I think it would just not do it anymore.
That would be my assumption.
And if you weren't using that feature, I mean, again, Apple's not just like randomly collecting browser history, which some people might think. You have to have an iCloud account and you have to be syncing Safari data. Because that's where it is. I mean, if I browse on my Mac right now and then go over to my iPad, I can see in the bookmarks section there's the history. And I think that syncs. I'm pretty sure it syncs.
Yeah.
It might also have been part of Safari tabs also, you know.
Yeah, I think that that checkbox really does more than just the bookmarks. I think it's
it syncs all your Safari data.
Your
logins and, yeah, a lot of history.
Lots of stuff going on. So, makes perfect sense. So, what is the okay. So, Apple has hired the big man from Amazon, Timothy Twerdahl. He was the general manager and director of Amazon Fire TV business over there. Mm-hmm. And so now he's working on Apple TV over at Apple. So he was in charge of the Fire TV since 2013, overseeing two generations of the product. He also, he was the director of internet TV at Netflix and a vice president of consumer devices at Roku. So he's all about these set top boxes.
Mm-hmm. Been around.
Yeah, so
I don't know. I don't get too excited about this kind of stuff because I believe he's a marketing guy.
Right. Yes.
So we're not talking about engineering or anything related to necessarily the hardware. I guess the assumption would be that maybe with these other rumors with Apple looking at original content and streaming content for Apple TV, this is another indication that Apple is sort of moving in that direction, hiring somebody who has a lot of experience with that sort of thing. You know, another assumption that some people are making is that maybe Apple is going to do something like a Fire Stick version of the Apple TV, where it's just like a simple streaming, you know, device that you can plug into the back of your TV, something like that.
It's just like an
I don't know
play.
If I take it that far, but I think this is more about getting someone on board who can work with some of the teams we've been hearing on original content to sort of market and promote the content that Apple might be trying to put together.
Gotcha.
And he certainly would have a lot of experience in that area. And if you look at, you know, sort of how well Amazon's done with its original content and original programming, seems like a good hire if that's the direction Apple's moving in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You want to do some picks? Do you have anything else to
bring up? Smurfly.
Okay. Well, what do you got?
Let me see. I was trying to think of what I wanted to do because I had a couple picks, but I'm pulling out my iPad now. I got to get to the little screen where I've added some new apps. All right. I am going to go... I'm a little tentative on this one, only because I'm frustrated by it. And I don't know if that frustration is a good or a bad thing. But the guys over at, well, this isn't necessarily Panic. This is Bitbucket. Is that what they go by now? Basically, Cabal Sasser and I think Nevin Morgan had his hand in this thing. They came out with a new game this past week called Stagehand.
Oh, okay, cool.
And what they're calling it is a reverse side-scrolling platformer. So it's an 8-bit sort of style of graphics. It's an endless runner. And the way it works is it sort of looks like Mario, right, where your guy's running along an environment left to right across the screen, side-scroller, and then you would normally, like, you know, jump up different levels and try and grab coins and power-ups and all that sort of thing, right? So your character, you're guiding him with a control stick or some sort of on-screen controls, and you're pressing jump and run and stuff like that. The way this is different and where that reverse comes in is what you're actually doing with this one is you're manipulating, like, the obstacles and the environment to sort of let the guy run through. So he's already running. So you start the level and he just starts running. And then what you have to do is you have to pull down the platforms or move the obstacles to get him to be able to run through the environment. It's kind of hard to understand, but, like, once you start playing it, you'll get it. And then what's happening is he's sort of running away from the edge of the screen. And if you don't keep the obstacles out of his way, or if he has to, like, jump too much, so every time he jumps, he sort of, it slows him down. And so it pushes him more and more toward the left edge of the screen, or I guess you could say the left edge of the screen gets, like, closer to the character. Mm-hmm. And eventually, if you're not fast enough, you get squished, basically, and you die. So that's the end of the level. So the idea is to see how far you can get through the environment and keep him sort of in the center of the screen. The slower and slower you get, the more you're going to move toward the left-hand edge. And if the left-hand edge hits you, then that is the end of the game, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. $2.
$2. My thing, the reason I'm tentative on it is it's super hard. Like, I cannot get, like, a game to last longer than maybe a minute if I'm lucky. So it's got a little bit of that sort of Flappy Bird-esque kind of element to it, where it's, like, super hard and super challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll work on iPhone or iPad. I think it's easier on iPad because you have to grab all these little platforms and stuff like that and move them around, like, really quickly. And just, like, getting ahead of yourself, you have to kind of be several steps ahead to keep him from getting slowed down. So I haven't figured it out yet, but it's a nice casual, and it's definitely quick games, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, so your games are not going to last very long. So it's perfect for, like, playing real quickly in line or as you're waiting for something, because you're not going to have to wait very long before you're, like, dead and you can just quit the game.
You'd be shouting at your phone in line, making everybody uncomfortable.
But yeah, it's awesome. I mean, the quality of it is totally awesome because, you know, from the studio that it's from, you know, if you played The Incident was one of they did and Space Age, I think. Mm-hmm. Is that one of theirs? Anyway, the quality of the whole thing is awesome. And it's $2 and it's fun. So
awesome.
Yep. Stagehand.
Yeah. All right. So my pick, I don't think I've talked about this yet. Have I picked my Raspberry Pi project? I don't think I did.
You've talked about it in the past. So I don't know if you have a current new one.
Well, it's the garage door. I don't think I ever picked it. But so my pick is converting your current garage door into a Siri controlled garage. And I, of course,
smart garage door.
Smart garage door. So and I guess it's kind of a double pick, because when I told my mom about this several months ago, she said, oh, you should do that for us. You know, we've got this old garage door opener. They said it's going to cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars to replace because we lost the opener. And so we can't control it remotely because it's such an old thing. And so for Christmas,
well, how do you open the garage if you can't control it remotely?
You have to press the button inside.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, you know, you can get universal garage door openers, allegedly, like the little clickers.
Allegedly, you could not for this. And I'm guessing, okay. I'm going to call BS on that, but regardless.
I had to buy one for one of my old garage doors before I replaced it.
So I, for Christmas.
You got to program it, which isn't fun, but.
Right.
Anyway.
I brought a Raspberry Pi and some like resistors and a relay and stuff. And I set it up so that she can yell at her phone when she, you know, leaves the house. And it'll cool. open and close it. So I have this thing going at my place. My mom has one. There's a nice little tutorial on how to do it. It uses, I want to set it up with my Pi Zero. I just haven't gotten around to it. But you can use, you know, a $5 Raspberry Pi. You buy I think it's maybe like $9 for the relay board.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe a couple more dollars for some assorted electronics from Amazon. And the rest of the magic happens in software. You use, it's called Hapnode.js, Hapnode.js. It's a Node.js extension
mm-hmm.
that works, I believe it stands for HomeKit Accessory Protocol. So it basically broadcasts as a HomeKit device. And so once your Pi is on the network, then it will be visible to all your devices on network. I have it set up so it'll work anywhere because I have my Apple TV. You can also use your iPad as a home bridge. So anything you can use as a home bridge, it sees it. It has no problem with doing it. It just looks like any other HomeKit accessory. So I can open and close my garage door from wherever I am. It'll tell me when it opens and closes. It's super cool. I love it. I love being able to yell at my watch and like living in the future, my garage door, physical things move. So it's cool. So I am linking to a tutorial on YouTube that'll get you on your way. So you'll need a little bit of, you know, probably a little bit of coding experience and maybe a touch of electronics experience, but it's real simple.
So with this Hapnode thing, I could also use this just to do like stupid Raspberry Pi stuff too, right?
Yeah. So that's
like
the other cool
I could
thing.
Like have it blink an LED on my Raspberry Pi through Siri.
Yeah. Yeah. You
like
can do
something
any
dumb
of the,
like that.
Anything that HomeKit is compatible with, it can broadcast that service. You would have to write your own accessory.
Right.
Script, but it's all JavaScript yeah. based. And so you just say, hey, I'm an accessory and I do these things. And it's actually very simple because of the big API it has. So
it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yep. Been digging it. So with that, you can find all the picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. You can review the show on iTunes, rate the show, tell a friend. If you have any questions or comments or feedback, send that to feedback@theiosshow.com. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com, and Adam Christensen's at the Maccast, maccast.com, and at Maccast on Twitter. Thanks for stopping by, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me. You got me distracted now. Now I'm reading about Hap.
Yeah.
Node.js.
Yeah, don't get too distracted. You can... That it occupied me for a while.
It was like, look, if you're interested in running HAP over Bluetooth Low Energy, check this out. I'm going down the rabbit hole right now.
Enjoy. Yeah. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
An iPod. An iPod. Internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we gonna do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're gonna use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck. Yuck. No.